From a Supreme Court decision to a new case on the court's docket, yesterday the highest court in the land agreed to hear a case that could have implications here in Lansing. The case pits Michigan's Attorney General Bill Schuette against the Bay Mills Indian Community's efforts to operate a casino in northern Lower Michigan. Here to explain the details in the case and how the Supreme Court's decision could be felt here in Lansing is the Michigan Public Radio Network's Rick Pluta. Welcome, Rick.
Hi.
Welcome. What is at the heart?
Well, you know what? Actually, apropos of your last segment, we should point out that the Supreme Court has another affirmative action case waiting in front of it for the next session, and it's a University of Michigan case. This University of Texas case almost tees that up. And the Michigan case before the U.S. Supreme Court in the next session is one where the issue is, does Michigan's state constitutional ban on race-based, gender-based affirmative action create an excluded group? And the idea is that if you are, this is, you know, what the challenge is that if you are the child of an alumni, if you've got, you know, some other status within the university, you can go and lobby the legislature, the university board, for a change to admissions policy to better the position of your group. However, if you are an ethnic minority, if you are African American, if you are Hispanic, something like that, then you cannot. That it creates this excluded class to petition the government to improve your situation, and that's going to be up in the courts next term.
Okay, that is an interesting update. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the state
of
Michigan.
Bay Mills case,
yep. And the Bay Mills case. What is at the heart of this dispute?
Well, we will see. You know, the Supreme Court will do what the Supreme Court will do, but the challenge here is that the Bay Mills Indian tribe from up north used money that it got from the federal government, money and interest accrued on that money. It was a law passed by Congress to compensate Michigan Indian tribes for basically being underpaid in the 1800s for land that the tribes gave up to the state. The Bay Mills tribe used that money and the interest on that money to buy a plot of land in Vanderbilt. And what they say is that land in Vanderbilt is sovereign tribal territory, which means they can put a casino on it. Attorney General Bill Schuette says, no, that's not the case, that it is not, this is off-reservation land, it's not the independent tribal property, and so you can't. He says what's at stake here is the ability of Michigan to manage the proliferation of casinos within its borders. What the Bay Mills Indian tribe says is what's at stake here is the tribe's sovereign immunity, that their right, you know, to basically conduct their own affairs. Other tribes are watching this because obviously they care a lot about the principle at stake here, but they also don't like the fact that this casino is going up in Vanderbilt. So there's mixed feelings about that.
What appears to be at the heart of this is a ruling from back in 1997 that stated that the interest income that you mm-hmm. referred to a minute ago that
yeah,
was used
that's
to
that's a
that
critical question.
Purchase the land by the Bay Mills purchased the land, quote, shall be held as Indian lands are held.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the Attorney General is going after.
Right.
Okay.
That because the money from this settlement can be, what the law says is the money from this settlement and the interest on the money from this settlement. So it's just, you know, money that you've earned since then can be used to buy land that basically becomes another tribal reservation.
Property.
Part
yeah.
of the Indian the sovereign Indian nation subject to its rules, its laws, not those of the rest of the state of Michigan.
Will the Supreme Court be specifically looking at that? I'm led to believe this is a very narrowly framed question that's going before the Supreme Court.
Courts, and especially appellate courts, like to rule as narrowly as possible. I mean, so I think one of the things that we're all going to be keeping an eye on is, does the court keep it to whether or not interest earned on this money from the federal government can be used to buy land that then becomes part of the tribal trust?
Right.
Or can it not, or does it become a much larger question regarding big picture issues of tribal sovereignty and what they can do on land acquired in particular ways? And of course, right here in Lansing, we have a pending controversy where another Indian tribe, the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewas, would like to open a casino downtown. And so, this question of how tribes can acquire land and what their status is in the scheme of things. Because, tribes also own a lot of land that is not subject to the tribal trust. That they own small businesses and things like that. And, every dry cleaning company that happens to be owned by an Indian tribe is not automatically part of a reservation.
Will the Attorney General, by any chance, on his side, will he refer to any provisions in existing compacts, language in other compacts that already exist between the state and Indian tribes, in an effort to make his case?
Oh, sure.
There's other language in play.
Because you want to say that basically what he's arguing is that the Vanderbilt Casino and any subsequent casinos like it that might come along don't comport with treaties between whatever the Indian tribe is and the state.
Okay.
And we should point out that the Attorney General is a vociferous opponent of gambling and casino gambling. That he certainly does try to block it at every turn.
Do you know if the once the
probably not
once the Supreme Court rules on this, will this have implications in other parts of the country? Obviously, it could. It's the U.S. Supreme Court that's ruling, but I imagine other states must.
Do you always ask questions and then answer them yourself,
face,
Mark?
leading questions.
Of course. The issue is just, how wide will the court's decision in this be? You were just talking about the University of Texas case from the court, and the court, set up for the status quo and just sent it back to a lower court. That there's a whole variety of options that are available, and we'll be looking to see exactly how the court decides to handle this decision after it's argued. I think we're expecting it to be argued in the fall.
Shifting gears here, since you're in the Capitol every day, what are you hearing with regard to the Senate and Medicaid expansion?
That there is a session day on the calendar, but we should point out that there is a physical problem with getting either the Senate or the House back because as soon as they walked out the doors, they started a refurbishment, new carpets, new technology being laid under the floorboards. Literally, the floor is ripped up. There is no place for them to go and stand and vote. That there would actually have to be sort of a complex set of procedural maneuvers just to pass the resolution that would allow them to meet somewhere else. But there is a session day on the calendar, and the governor is trying to press them to return and vote on this on July 3rd. But right now the status is that they will open the board. There will be no attendance. There will be no roll call votes.
He how much pressure? I mean, he's going on this statewide tour. How much pressure do you expect him to wield on this? He wants the public
weigh in. He'll do the best job that he can, but a governor's options are limited in this. We saw Jennifer Granholm try to do this with a tax overhaul that ultimately didn't result in what she wanted. She wanted some big picture budget changes. Really, the last person who I think did this successfully was probably John Engler when he marketed Proposal A with sort of a laser-like intensity on what it means to you individual as far as your property taxes. The governor's going to try it, that they will pull in, modern campaign techniques. Robocalls are already being used. The various associations, the hospitals, the business groups that are behind this will be pushing it. But at the same time, Americans for Prosperity, which is basically a Tea Party group, is out there there and they're buying, you know, they say that they're going to buy radio time in persuadable, in districts of persuadable senators to try and get them to stand fast against the Medicaid expansion. So, you know, it's a war of messaging, but it's not going to be one way.
Great segment, Rick. Thanks very much for your help. Rick Pluta is the Capital Bureau Chief and Managing Editor of the Michigan Public Radio Network. Thank you.
And El Dictator Potentate.